Well, this is going to be, in a sense, almost the beginning of a really long sermon that starts today and finishes next Sunday. At least it very well could turn out to be that way, because the themes of Romans 14 sort of, they don't exactly scramble together in my head, but it's hard to sort of pull out a couple of different things out of them. So they're going to be similar, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as this makes sense. Don't worry, I won't stop in the middle of something and say, you better come back next week to find out what happens. I'm not sure if there's such a thing as a cliffhanger sermon, but if there is, I'm certainly not going to try one today, or I hope ever. But one of the things that struck me out of this portion of Romans 14 is where the sermon title comes from, which is a direct quotation with a bit more of emphasis in one part where it says, we do not live to ourselves. In the translation, I think it's the New Revised Standard Version I was looking at, and I just changed it to, we do not live to ourselves, which is odd that we would have to even bring it up. When I was talking to the children before, asking them if they needed help and if they needed to help others, for them it was as obvious as saying, you know, are the lights on? You know, why are you even asking that question? It's just foolish. And yet, there's this pernicious nonsense in our culture now that says that, no, I do not live to other people. I do live to myself. That I am all that matters. I am the measure of all things. I have taken myself from nothing to here, and therefore I can decide about virtually everything. And, I mean, the problems with this are just, I don't think we have time to list them all. But if nothing else, this whole idea of being a self-made person, and because you're a self-made person, you no longer have any responsibility to those around you, I find just bordering on insane in a clinical sense. Not just insane as in something I don't like. This last week, I wasn't well. I went back to work for a couple of days and then, I don't know, ran a fever. Well, I don't know what it was. Anyway, I was at home. But not so sick that I could just sleep for 23 and a half hours a day, but not well enough to go back to work. So I spent some time on the internet, which is not unusual, not just looking at cat videos and such, but actually sort of following some people that I like to know what they think and then seeing where it took me. And I bounced up again and again and again with this very pervasive attitude right now that says that we don't have to do things for people who are poorer than us, and we don't have to do things for people in other countries who are going through problems because look what we have made of ourselves. And people will actually say this out loud. And I just think, like, how did you miss the fact that you didn't build your own roads? I've never met anyone who built their own roads, who built their own power plant for their electricity, who has provided all their own medical care. That even includes the doctors I know. I don't know anybody who's done this kind of thing who can even remotely say that they are responsible for where they are. They've taken the things that they were given and they've turned them into wonderful things. Absolutely. I have no dispute with that. But for people who have taken advantage, appropriate advantage of the opportunities they've had for education, have networked well and have made connections and have worked hard, to then say that because they are there, at that level, they have no responsibility to anyone else. I find just crazy. And I'm willing to put up with it. I'm sure they're awfully happy that I'm so gracious as to allow them to put up with it. These people that I don't know, these are usually coming from a political perspective. Those are the people I was following this week and poking around with. But maybe they actually even believe this. And I just don't get it. But if they want to do that, then I guess that's okay. I mean, people can think whatever they want, whatever crazy ideas they have. The problem is, of course, when it moves into affecting us, which, of course, sort of goes counter to what they're saying in the first place, but nevertheless, we'll just leave that alone. The bigger problem is when we see similar kinds of things in the church. And I hasten to add that this is not some sermon that's directed at you, because I don't think this is the case. I'm not coming here preaching a sermon of correction, a prophetic word to you, oh, you, my sinful people. It's nothing like that. But what came to me out of this text was The need to remind ourselves that we do not live to ourselves. That we have a responsibility to help each other. And we'll talk about this from a different perspective next week, but just the reminder that we have a responsibility to help each other. And that's the easy one. Everybody I know who attends this church and attends most churches have no problem helping other people. But lots of us have trouble receiving help. And this has been coming up. It's, I don't know why it's striking me particularly, but I'm quite sure I've mentioned this off and on over the last several months. But I think it's something we need to be reminded of. That when we say we do not live to ourselves, it's not just that we're not so selfish and hoarding of our gifts, but that we also are open to receiving assistance and help from others. I know beyond the slightest shadow of a doubt that everyone in this room has at least once experienced that tremendous aggravation of finding out in retrospect that somebody struggled through something that you could have helped them with and they never mentioned it because they didn't want to bother you. Okay, who's bothered now? That is just so bothersome that somebody wouldn't bother me to do something that I can do in a fraction of the time with almost none of the effort. We see this most frequently, or well, maybe not most frequently, but very frequently, with our children. My children, your children, children everywhere. And I'm not talking about those opportunities where we let our children struggle through things so they learn. But the number of times my kids have complained later about something that they needed to do that I could have helped them with is just way too many for me to pretend it's just a one-off. Like, and I just don't understand it. Like, why is this such a problem? For us to ask for help. And then I realize that's a completely rhetorical question because I'm terrible about asking for help. And why? Pride? Worry that someone will think the less of me? I'm sure those are at the heart of this. And some of it is an authentic desire not to bother other people. And sometimes it's that I didn't know that someone could help me with this particular thing. And that's sort of frustrating for everybody involved, but it's not quite the same. It's just this idea that says, well, you know, I'm just not going to bother them. Well, that's taking a lot on myself, isn't it? Because what I've done when I say that I won't bother you is I've decided that I'm going to think for you. And I don't trust you to say to me that, no, I can't do that, or that's a bother, and I don't want to do it even. And so I take all of that volition out of your hands and put it into mine. That's not good. It's hard to build a community, or it's hard to build community with people who only give and who won't receive. And I know it's hard because I've had that very difficulty. I've found it hard to ask for help when I've needed help. Because I've worried about that I'd be judged. And I have some experience with being judged for asking for help, for saying this is too much for me, or I can't figure this out. And have people look at me going, well, what's wrong with you? Of course you can. Are you stupid? Well, no, I just don't know this. And then I feel bad. And okay, that has happened. The vast majority of the time when I've asked someone for help, when I've come to them from a perspective of saying, I can't do this, I am too weak to accomplish this, or whatever the language is, the vast majority of the time, people have said, I'd love to help. And they've never come back to me later and said, ha, I'm better than you because I helped you there. I've never had them even come back later and say, I helped you then, you owe me, whatever it might be. I've never had anybody say that to me ever. Why? Because when it comes to giving, we're well aware of the fact that we do not live to ourselves. When it comes to receiving, that's a little bit harder for us. And I think part of it's human nature, and that's okay. It means at least we're all in the same boat. For some of us, I've run across some people who say that this is fundamentally a male issue. To which my unfailing response is, "You don't know any women, do you? You've never been to the house of someone that, where the hostess is doing everything and been told very, very firmly that no, you will not help." There's nothing wrong with this in the sense that it's sinful, because of course it's not. But what it does is that it gets in the way of the give and take of community. A relationship that is all one directional, where someone always gives and someone always receives, isn't a healthy relationship. Every relationship has periods of time where one person gives more than the other, or one group gives more than the other, and that's fine. But over the course of the life of the relationship, there's give and take. But we can't give and we can't take in appropriate ways if we don't really understand that we do not live to ourselves. If we don't really understand that everything we do and everything we are has been created with the benefit of others around us. And for us in the church in particular, we create this community because we want people to exercise their gifts. Because in the body of Christ, just like in our own human bodies, there are some things that some parts can do and other parts can't. My fingers are amazingly dexterous, considering how many times they've been banged around and the fact that none of them are really straight. But they type and they can do great things, but they can't digest food. And nobody thinks they should. But sometimes, even in the church, we'll come to the conclusion that really we're here to give, not to receive. And it's true, it's more blessed to give than receive. But that's what it says. It doesn't say it's blessed to give and you better not receive. And that's in another context altogether. We do not live to ourselves. We can't. The libertarian political strain that says that, you know, this is, we're sort of self-made people, it's just kind of crazy. And in a political sense, well, you know, you're making a point, you want to accomplish something, go, you know, fine. This is a democracy, we can talk about whatever we like. In day-to-day real human relationships, that's just not possible. We have to have other people in our lives. And we have to be willing to give from a strength, from a position of strength, and receive from a position of weakness. We have to be ready to admit that in some areas, maybe only one if you're that spectacular human being, but there's at least one area for all of us that we are weaker than someone else. And you notice when Paul talks about weak and strong, he tells us that neither side can look down on the other. That being in a position of weakness doesn't mean that people can look down on you, but it doesn't mean that you can look down on people who are stronger than you either. You can't let your pride prevent other people from helping you, because you have now started to look down on them. You decline to receive their gifts for whatever reason. And Paul says, no, that's just not on. You can't do it. You shouldn't do it. And you'll never be successful if you do. There's no such thing as a self-made person. We all know it when we actually think about it. Everybody's had assistance at some point along the way, and most of us lots. So why do we sometimes forget here, among the people we love the best, that we are weaker than some of them in some ways, and we're stronger than some of them in some ways? There's no room for judgment if we don't live to ourselves. When we've decided that we are all that matters and judgment happens, it can't not. When we think that we're all that matters, well, of course we're going to judge people, because we are the measure of all things. We have a perspective from which to judge. But when we realize that's not the case, when we realize that we really can't judge people, it becomes considerably easier for us to believe that, well, then maybe people aren't judging us. And maybe when someone offers assistance, they're doing it because they want to offer assistance. Not from a position of judgment or a position of getting one up on you or anything else, but because they want to offer assistance, because they're decent people just like we are. It's easy, if we're not careful, to become people who give only, who hide our need for community, and who suggest that no one can help us. When we put it that way, it sounds pretty silly, doesn't it? What we usually do is we pick out the people who do want to help us and say, well, I'm sure somebody can help us, but not them. I don't want to bother them. They don't have the resources. Whatever it might be. Paul tells us, just don't do that. Just stop. Stop thinking for other people. Stop judging other people for being weaker or for being stronger than you. Because that's not what we're called for. We're not called to that. We're not called to a judgmental group of people. We're called to community. We're called to create a body where some people do this and others do that, and it all works together. But it can only do that only if we stop living just to ourselves. As I said at the beginning, this isn't a message that has anyone in particular in mind. The possible exception of me. Because I know how hard it is for me to receive, and I suspect if it's hard for me, it might be hard for at least one of you out there. And we're all working on this. And I know that we're working pretty hard on it. But as I was reading this text, I thought again, let's just remind ourselves that we receive when we're weak because we are weak. There's nothing in Scripture that tells me that we will always be the strongest person in the room. There's a lot in there that tells me that I won't very often be the strongest person in the room. And when I'm not, asking the assistance of the person who is just an admission of what is, an admission that we are all part of the same body, that we are all part of the same community, and that we're all willing to do what God has given us to do, which sometimes is to receive. Amen.